Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are at the bank, KeyBank Center, hosting Sabres and Wild tonight. Welcome in. Sun is, for the most part, shining here
Beautiful.
In downtown Buffalo.
Beautiful.
So I'll take it. It's November 27th. I feel like Minnesota Buffalo is kind of an annual November thing around these parts. And, this is a terrific matchup tonight. It's all gravy, Marty.
Oh, there you go. We're starting with the gravy boat already. I think it's going to be a theme throughout the whole episode here. Just so you remember, yesterday, this guy, one Brian Duff, said if the Sabres scored 9, he's inviting people to douse him in gravy with the gravy boats after the game on set on the 200 level. So I'm still holding you to it. I'm telling you, I'm going in the locker room after this, and I'm telling everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm telling everybody on Minnesota's side.
Yeah.
Listen, if you're down 4-0, let them score 9. Like, let's go. Let's make it happen. So that's the one thing.
I'm quite sure I have John Hines on my, not, I don't even want to say my side, because I obviously want the 9 goals or more. But yeah, that's, although,
our
good friend Rico from Napoli's is supposed to be in attendance tonight, I think. So, you know, it might be good to have a secondary clothing option in case, you know, I can't really walk out of the building covered in gravy.
I'm sure we can find some Sabre swag from the locker room to cover. If that happens, I'll be happy. But here's the thing. This is an incredibly fun matchup. Minnesota, their start to the season.
Great
the Sabres,
matchup.
The way they're playing. I kind of pulled some numbers, Duffer. Okay?
Shocker.
Buffalo and Minnesota. The records are different because Minnesota's 13-4-4 with 30 points. The Sabres are 11-9-1. Mm-hmm. So technically Minnesota's plus 9 in the NHL 500 department. The Sabres are plus 2. But when you look at the expected goals for at 5-on-5, mm-hmm. Minnesota is 20th. The Sabres are 17th. Like the expectations of scoring,
yep.
They're pretty much the same thing. Expected goals against. The Sabres are 15th. Minnesota's second. Minnesota's had a really, really strong defensive game mm-hmm. and great goaltending so far this season. But look, let's put the first 2.5-3 weeks of the Sabres season on the side and let's focus on what has been successful for them. The play of Luukkonen, Reimer a little bit, the way the Sabres have defended without Tage Thompson and kept the scoring from the other teams really low. I feel like the numbers are very similar if you look at the, you know, recent history here. Now, yeah, the Wild are second in team goals against average and third in team save percentage. But again, this to me is just they have been able to do it from the start of the season.
Right.
Where the Sabres, it started 3 weeks into the season. But they are two very similar teams in the way that they approach the game. They have one player, Kirill Kaprizov, who is potentially my MVP this year, the way that he's played and put the team on his back. But the Sabres have more players that have had 10 points or more. Mm-hmm. They've had more balanced scoring than Minnesota. Minnesota's been, you know, Rossi and Boldy and, you know, Kaprizov. So that's the big difference there. But they're very, very similar teams when I look at the way that they build their success.
Tage Thompson is back tonight, so it does present an individual marquee matchup, if you will. Thompson on one side, Kaprizov on the other. We know where Tage stood from a goal-scoring standpoint mm-hmm. before his recent injury bout, but the Sabres really came together in his absence, winning 4 of 5 games. Now, the lines do look different than what we saw in practice yesterday, and so the expectation based on morning skate, obviously, Thompson back between Peterka and Tuck, but Marty gets interesting after that. Krebs on a line with Cousins and Benson, with Peyton playing right side, and as importantly and or interestingly, Jiří Kulik gets to stay in the middle as they have Zucker on the left and Jack Quinn on the right. Take us through lines 2 and 3 and what you make of the reconfiguration under Lindy.
Well, I think what Lindy Ruff looked at is who are my four centers in the game. So he had Thompson, Cousins, Kulik, and McLeod, and how do you fit them into your lineup? So, yes, Cousins in the middle with Benson and Krebs. It was more, okay, like Quinn hasn't really worked on the right side of Cousins and Benson. Let's put Krebs in a work mentality with Benson, with Cousins. Maybe they're a complete shutdown line, right? And let's use them in that role. And Jiří Kulik has been really good in the middle of the ice. And Lindy Ruff has even said, it's a small sample, but the creation, the offense from Jiří in the middle compared to the wing is a big difference. Zucker is at a really strong start to the season, and he's experienced to say, hey, I'm going to go with the kid here and make it happen. And Jack Quinn, who has looked better on the West Coast, is still trying to find his rhythm here. So I think when Lindy Ruff is looking to put Quinn on that line is, I don't want to say by default, but it's in the hopes that Jiří and Jack and Zucker can find some kind of chemistry there. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that Ryan McLeod is technically, when you look at the roster, a fourth line center. McLeod has been the third line guy for most of the season. Even went up to the top line.
Yeah,
took the place of
the top line for the last five games.
Tate took the place of Tage Thompson in the injury, and now all of a sudden it's like on the fourth line. I'm not looking into that as significantly as maybe some others would. Well, you have four centers. You have Thompson, Cousins, Kulik, and McLeod. You have to go 1, 2, 3, 4. And things are really, I don't want to say likely, but could always change in game. Lindy Ruff has been known to change things around.
Everyone does.
Third period, second period, whatever. And McLeod is one really trusted source for Lindy Ruff if he needs somebody to come in and play for Jiří as a third line center. Mm. Or come in and maybe, look, Cousins, Benson, Krebs line isn't going the way that Lindy wants. Move McLeod there. Move Cousins to the right wing. Krebs goes back and plays with Malenstein and Lafferty. There's some really easy interchangeable pieces in that lineup. I like the way it's looking right now because you need depth to be able to beat Minnesota at home. You need to be able to take advantage of the bottom six. And the bottom six right now for the Sabres is built in a way that they can control the game in the matchup one-on-one.
He's Friday. I'm Wednesday, based on attire. Marty went black and red, even though it's not a black and red game. So, whatever.
Man, call me Friday. I love that.
You are Friday. I mean, everybody loves
Friday,
right?
Every day is Friday. Let's go.
We do have Black and Red Friday coming up, but we have the gravy boat to offer you tonight if you're coming down to KeyBank Center. So look forward to seeing you work your way through the doors. And even if you don't, you can still be involved in tonight through our Thanksgiving Eve 50-50 raffle. So it's a special event, if you will, presented by Northtown Automotive. It is live right now as we speak. Scan the QR code on your screen or go to sabres.com/5050. We have a guaranteed jackpot, do we not, of 50,000? Yes, we do.
Yes.
And so obviously it's going to be much higher than that. And you can purchase your tickets right now. And you go to sabres.com/5050. Proceeds, of course, benefiting the Buffalo Sabres Foundation. Bo Byram is with us as Sabres get set for the Wild tonight. How would you describe the California trip?
Yeah, I think it was good. You know, I don't think we necessarily played our best hockey, but good teams find ways to win games like that. So we had great goaltending and some timely goals for us. So, you know, I feel like it was a real good confidence boost for our group.
Was the feeling after every game, like it, we show on the broadcast, like the vest being passed around, Lindy Ruff coming in with the, you know, post-game message. It seemed like there was a lot of energy in those post-game moments. Even some you mentioned, like not the best games, but the way to find, you know, a good result. So was the energy as high as it showed through the camera?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I feel like in a lot of those games, there's big moments at the end to secure a victory, whether it be is a big 6-on-5 shift against LA to kick the road trip off, whatever it might be. So, you know, everyone was really excited, and a lot of big moments throughout all games, whether it be a save or a block or a big goal when we needed it, like I said. So it was a lot of fun. I thought our group did a good job of kind of handling some ups and downs of the games, and You know, managed to get 6 points, which is the most important.
You mentioned the block. When Malenstein blocked that shot and left the ice, I thought 4-6, he's out. Yeah. And then he came back a couple minutes later. Like, could you, like, sense that, ooh, that hit him in a bad spot? But when he came back, were you surprised?
Yeah, you know what it's like. Sometimes you can hear the shot hit something, like a piece of plastic or something, maybe, so you think you'll be all right. But that one just sounded like straight body. So
straight flesh. Painful. Straight flesh. Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
What have you learned now in the entirety of your time with the Sabres, but most specifically with this new group this year?
I think there's lots of things that not only myself has learned, but, you know, everybody. And we have to keep learning. You know, we're a really young team, and that's no secret. So there's going to be nights where maybe we're not at our best, or, you know, we make some mistakes. But I feel like we've got a pretty good mix of young guys and a few veteran guys mixed in there. And I think the biggest thing is we love being around each other, and, you know, we have a lot of fun together. So I think we got a great group of guys, and as long as we can keep learning and, you know, striding forward, that it should be a good season for us.
You started the season with Owen Power, and he had a great start to the year, especially putting up the points. And then, whoop, there was a switch, and then you ended up with Dahlin, and then Dahlin took off. Do you feel like you're the facilitator? You're the common denominator in these two situations?
I don't know. I'm pretty lucky to get to play with those guys. You know, both, you know, really good talents in the NHL, and I just do my best to compliment them and also play my own game. But, you know, they're both really easy to play with, intelligent players, and always seem to be making the right plays. So it's definitely a treat being able to be on the ice with them.
Does it feel like a group of six that has this kind of offensive aura about it? I mean, statistically, your group ranks very high based on your production, Dahlin's production, Power's production.
Yeah, I think so, but we all take pride in playing hard and playing the right way. I don't think any of us are cheaters or cheating for offense, you know. We take care of our own end first and try to get involved when we can, but at the end of the day, our job is to keep the puck out of the net as well. So, you know, when you're playing good teams that have good lineups and good upfront skill and talent, you got to be dialed in on the details in your own end.
Lindy Ruff has a little bit of an old-school mentality to him. He coached me, and I mean, our best defensemen were guys that couldn't make a tape-to-tape pass. They just went off the glass and out, and, you know, that was great. But it's not today's game. But I sense that, especially in the last couple of weeks, if there's no plays, it's okay for you guys to go off the glass and out or flip the puck in the neutral zone, and, you know, we'll figure it out later. Is that something that is discussed? You know, let's not force anything. If we have to just put in the neutral zone, we'll worry about it later?
For sure. You know, Lindy definitely gives us all the green light to make plays and be up in the rush and, you know, break the puck out. But there's also a time and a place for everything. And sometimes, you know, the play breaks down or whatever it might be, and there's not much available to you. So I think that's a maturity thing with our group and, you know, kind of sensing when or knowing when's a good time to make a play and when's the right time to just advance the puck. So something that we got to keep working on for sure.
Tonight's giveaway at the game is a gravy boat for the, you know, first 10,000 that are going to show up. Are you going to try to sneak one out and try to, like, you know, you got to put something in the middle of the Thanksgiving table tomorrow. And a nice gravy boat always does something pretty impactful.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. My mom and a few of her friends seen the giveaway going on, and they want one. So I got to try to find a few around the rink here.
Okay, well, we'll tell Mitch that, you know, you need something.
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround, though, on Friday with an afternoon game. Do you actually – will you actually indulge in a nice Thanksgiving meal tomorrow?
I actually don't know what the plan is, to be honest. I do what I'm told. But, no, we had a nice team meal the other night, a big Thanksgiving thing with all the guys there. So it was good to have everyone together. And, you know, like
was
I said,
that on the trip?
Like, no, just when we got back all the wives and girlfriends and kids and whatnot. So
nice. It's
fun to have everyone together. And like I said, we got a group of guys that loves hanging out and doing stuff together. So it makes it fun.
What, okay, so there's a lot of newborns, a lot of babies in car seats and all of that. is there enough to have a mini hockey game? Or is there like that age group right now within the locker room and the kids?
There's a few that would be ready for a big mini sticks game, but there's also a lot of newborns, like you said, and quite a few fresh ones running around. Well, actually not running around, crawling around or whatnot. So I'm sure in the next year or two, there'll be some big clashes.
Oh, that would be good.
You mentioned mom's interest in the gravy boat. Does your family come to many games? Do you expect to see them when you're in Western Canada? How does that work out throughout the year?
They try to get out to as many as possible. Obviously, it's tough getting out east here for them. It's a bit of a roller coaster, trains, planes, and automobiles, but it's all right. So they've been out a few times already, and then they're coming out for Christmas and and whatnot, so it'll be good to have them out. And obviously, everyone loves when their family's around, so I like that they make the trip.
So everybody laughs because I never celebrated the Canadian Thanksgiving much. Like, we don't really do it in Quebec all that much. And then I came to the U.S., and I was like, what is Thanksgiving? Like, I had no idea. So do you do a big Canadian Thanksgiving feast earlier in October and then another one? Or has it always been that way since you've been, you know, mostly in Colorado and then here in Buffalo?
Yeah, I feel like I've always done some sort of a bit of both, I guess you could say. A few of the Canadian guys got together this year and had one on the Canadian Thanksgiving, so that was good. And then obviously we did the team thing for the American Thanksgiving. I do feel like the American Thanksgiving trumps the Canadian one a little bit, but I'll keep that on the down low.
One game-related question for me. As a group, how do you try to contain Kaprizov?
Yeah. Obviously, not only Kaprizov, but they've got a lot of offensive weapons and a really good team in general. So it's a good challenge for us, you know, whenever you're going up against another good team in the league. It's kind of fun. It's a good measuring stick for yourself and the team. So, you know, I don't think one guy's necessarily going to shadow him around the whole game, but it'll be a team effort to, you know, play a solid defensive game.
Do you look at the standings in the locker room? I know it's been a point of emphasis, like, okay, let's put the standings out there. Let's look at them. Some players probably don't. Some do. Do you look at them?
Yeah, I'm always kind of checking out, seeing where everyone's at, seeing how everyone's doing. Obviously, super early in the season, I guess you could say, but I don't think it's a bad thing to kind of have that in the back of your mind. Obviously, the goal is always to win games and get points, but it's not a bad thing to, you know, see it every day and see where you're stacking up.
Thank you for the time today. Good luck tonight.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys.
My favorite night on the home calendar when we get a Thanksgiving Eve game like we do tonight. But you know what makes it even more special? The fact that we get right back at it on Friday with an afternoon game, and it's Black Friday a little bit early. Take advantage of the Sabres Black and Red Friday frenzy with this buy one, get one ticket offer. You can visit sabres.com/Black Friday to take advantage now through Friday. Yes, this is a perfect promo for Marty based on his color scheme today. And you can scan the QR code on the screen right now to make sure that you're in attendance on Friday in the come down from the actual Thanksgiving, if you will. And it promises to be as big a matchup. When we say big, we talk about teams that are doing things well. The Sabres have won 7 of 9.
Yep.
Minnesota's off to an amazing start, and Vancouver is arguably, and we have to use arguably because technically Minnesota has the most road points accrued so far this year, but the Canucks are on an 8-game road winning streak, all of which have featured Kevin Lankinen in goal, and he was stunning last night in a shutout victory of Boston. That might have been Lankinen's best game, honestly. Like, if you took that performance and put it in a playoff setting, people would be going off the charts right now about how Lankinen somehow, some way, kept the Bruins from scoring.
I've always liked Kevin Lankinen, and we've had that discussion many, many times. Very, very technically sound goaltender, moves well, and Vancouver's playing really good in front of him as well. Now, we talked to Shayna Goldman yesterday. She says, look at that top line. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Jake DeBrusque factoring in on a goal.
He's hot. Garland is hot.
That was an empty net, but look, Connor Garland has had many, many.
Yeah, but the DeBrusque goal doesn't happen if Garland doesn't get hit by the puck by being on top of the goalie as well.
Exactly.
And you watch recent games, like especially with the absence of JT Miller, Garland has been the absolute. You know what? I meant to bring this up. We talk about, you know, organic fan responses in game, right?
Yes.
And things that get cultivated in arena over time. I was watching that recent game. I think it was Vancouver and the Rangers. In game, after Garland had scored, like a few minutes later in Vancouver, the crowd just spontaneously starts chanting, Connor Garland. And I'm like, holy cow, this is incredible. This is what you just, you want that incredible attachment, right? And think of the journey, and I'm not to get too far off the path here, but like Garland's contract didn't match expectations, or he didn't meet expectations at the start in Vancouver. And then there was always the talk, well, who's he going to get moved to and whatever. Wow. And now he's a fan favorite right now. And it was part because of him playing with Dakota Joshua last year, and they were part of such a productive and energetic line. Anyway, I just love seeing stories like that. And I dare say that when you start getting the success that the Sabres have right now, 7 of 9, mostly driven by depth. Yep. Like, let's not forget, Tage Thompson is back tonight. He has scored in each of his last 4 games. He just hasn't played the last 5.
He was at 11 goals when he got injured against Montreal, which was tied with Cole Caulfield, who had scored in that game, to 11. And Caulfield got another goal to go to 12. And now he's like 5 back. But quick on Vancouver. You know, there's people that look at like Toronto as a very corporate market, and there's not a lot of life in the building. And I'm one of those people. I don't think that Toronto has as buzzing when you go to a game as, let's see, MSG and the Rangers, which is like just a lot of really fans that love the game and want to create chance, whatever. Vancouver, you talk about the Connor Garland chance. That was the Bruce There It Is chance with Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah.
And there has always been a fantastic atmosphere in Vancouver with the fan engagement. I feel like in Buffalo, the last few games here, we have seen a very, very engaged group of fans. There's a couple of guys right below us on the 200 that were like really into it, like screaming at the referee about the penalty on Jordan Greenway a few games ago against Mikey Riley. Mm-hmm. That's not a penalty, and he's yelling. And then I'm like, yeah, they're going to review it and they're going to rescind it. Don't worry.
It's true, Marty. Talk him down.
And then 2 minutes later, that's not a penalty. I'm like, I'm not going to explain it to you again. But the fans were really engaged into every moment.
And that's why I circled and couldn't circle it last year, because we didn't have the Thanksgiving Eve game.
Yes.
But traditionally, I have always felt, blessed by sitting where we sit and having the opportunity to do it, is Thanksgiving Eve brings out the best to me of the hardcore family, generational fan base. And that's what it's about. It's coming home. It's having a large group, or as big a group as your family is, right? It could be 2 people. It could be 8 people. And I always feel like that's what makes these nights super special. So this is an awesome test of 2 hot teams. I know Vancouver's dropped, or Minnesota's dropped the last 2. They're 0-1-1. They're 2-2-1 in the last 5. You're not going to keep the pace typically, although don't tell that to Winnipeg. you know, but they are a terrific team. By the way, like let me throw you under the gravy boat Zamboni here.
Yes.
I just got to make sure he's not walking around the corner. You weren't the biggest fan of John Hines hiring in Minnesota, right?
Nope.
His record is 47-28-9.
So when I drove in today, I was like, who's the coach in Minnesota again? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's John Hines. I was not a big fan of him. I didn't think he did good his time in Nashville. And, you know, and then, you know, but whatever. Like, you know, but I think he's done a great job there in Minnesota. And maybe it's just because he always looks like he's grumpy and angry on
maybe
the bench,
that's
right?
Why I love him.
And maybe that's what it is. Now, you mentioned the coaches. Lindy Ruff, when talking to the media today.
Right.
He's saying, didn't like our practice yesterday. Did not like our practice yesterday. And look, coming back from the West Coast, they gave him an extra day off. They traveled on Sunday. Monday did not skate. They practiced Tuesday. Did not like our practice. And I was watching the morning skate today. Mm-hmm. And usually the head coach in the morning skate just stands on the side, watches everything. It's the assistant coach kind of control the morning skate. Mm-hmm. Not this morning. Lindy Ruff was at center ice, tapping the stick, calling out the drills, let's go. Like, there was a big difference. And I noticed that. And then I heard him speak to the media after. I'm like, uh-huh. Like, that is him saying, I'm in charge. I didn't like yesterday. We're going to get this day started the right way. So let's see if it materialize into the start of the game and the full game tonight.
What else can a head coach do as the day progresses to try to feel like he's getting the group in the right place?
Asking questions.
Yeah.
Like when you do video, a lot of times you show the video and, you know, it's like, hey, this is what they do or whatnot. I saw a great clip of Bill Belichick. Sorry, like Bill's fans, but, you know, he's not coaching anymore, but he's doing video with, you know, a couple of guys like now, not when he played. Mm-hmm. But every time he's about to show a clip, mm-hmm. he asks a question. So what are we going to see next year? And then I think it was T.O., maybe Terrell Owens or somebody, he says, we're going to see the bootleg. Yeah, we're going to see a bootleg. Like, keep the guys engaged. Mm-hmm. Ask them questions as you're not just showing the video saying, hey, what's Minnesota all about? Hey, go back to a clip and ask a question. See how the players are engaged. Keep them really on their toes. Mm-hmm. You don't do that all the time because,
sure.
you know, you it's...
Well, yeah.
You know,
it
takes a lot or whatever, but
yep.
I think on a day like today, you ask questions and you keep pushing.
Okay, so we had one good Western boy in Bo Byram earlier. We'll have another in Darren Dreger coming up. Before we get there, though, I do want to focus on the goaltending matchup with Luukkonen and Gustafsson tonight. Luukkonen, as we know, riding a personal five-game win streak with microscopic numbers. Gustafsson, and again, I'll take it back to last year. I think you had some concerns about where he was at. How impressed
yep.
are you with Gustafsson's season numbers, 9-4-3, a .218, and a .923?
Look, I was very much in the doubting the Minnesota Wild, even re-signing Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yes.
Like, what's Bill Guerin doing? He has Jesper Wallstad, a very, very, very high-end prospect goaltender, mm-hmm. could easily have him in Minnesota with Philip Gustafsson. Gustafsson had shown so well before
yes.
in Minnesota, and last year it fell off, and Fleury did not have the best of seasons last year, looked old. Well, Fleury's been great this year. He's 4-0-1, 9-0-4, which is above league average. Gustafsson has been fantastic. And what I like about Gustafsson, and we talked about Kevin Lankinen and other goaltenders, is the structure in their game. But you add that with the quickness and movement, you know, the puck tracking and everything. He's always shown really well. It's about putting all the pieces together. The funny thing about Minnesota is if I look at what is the part of their game that the Sabres may want to take advantage of, is their penalty kill. The Sabres' power play, with Tage coming back,
correct, yes.
and the success, well, now they haven't scored a power play goal in two games, but the success that they had, right, 9 goals in 9 games before that, 7 in a row, like, to me, that's the matchup. Power play for the Sabres, Tage back against the penalty kill for Minnesota.
Okay, so it's Buffalo and Minnesota.
No, John Hines is not walking by
is
yet.
Is he not?
So, yeah,
how
no,
would
so.
Yeah, he is. He's got the hat
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah, he does have the hat. And that's Jack Capp 1 or 2.
See,
good buddy.
Go. All right. On that note, I'm waiting for Moose to come around the corner.
I think he already left.
Did he?
Yeah, I saw him this morning. Marcus Foligno, by the way, who, if you were at Dwyer Arena last night, you probably saw him there. He took an Uber from downtown all the way to Dwyer Arena in Niagara Falls because his nephew was on the ice for practice. And
aww.
He went to see his nephew practice at Dwyer Arena. As he walked into the building there, he told me this morning, he goes, I got development camp sweat because that's what the Sabres used to hold their, like, development camp
yeah.
and prospect camp or whatnot. And he goes, walking in there, you were sweating because you knew you were nervous. He had the sweats walking in last night, like a little PTSD.
I was going to say, Marcus Foligno probably would be best served not to come over, unlike his dad, who walked right in on the show. But
yes.
I only say that because he wants to keep a good thing going. The last guy to come around and say hi and interrupt was Linus Ullmark, and it has not gone particularly well.
Didn't go well for him, yes.
So, anyway, all right, quick break. Darren Dreger next here. Sabres Live from KeyBank Center. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres and Wild tonight at KeyBank Center. Can't wait for that. If you're staying in the Rochester area this evening, please take in the Amerks and the Monsters as Isaac Rosane is back with Rochester and the Mercs try to get back on a winning path. They've been challenged offensively over the last seven games, and it has been reflected in the results. They're 1-3-3 over that stretch. Sabres are 1-7-9. Darren Dreger's winning percentage is typically around 900, I think. Pretty highly ranking, and he's with us now. He's our hockey insider from TSN. Hi, Dregs. Thank you for joining us. What is the latest out of New York as it pertains to the Rangers and wanting to change?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously headlines made by the New York Rangers, and not the type of headline that general manager Chris Drury would like to make. You know, he would prefer that his business kind of just stays under the radar, like most NHL general managers. You don't want this type of stuff to get out publicly, even though, frankly, it happens a lot. And, of course, what we're talking about is the reported information this week about Jacob Trouba, Rangers captain, and veteran forward Chris Kreider being available by a trade. Now, Trouba is less surprising because this drifts all the way back to the draft, you know, and all the speculation there. But at that point, Trouba had full contract protection. In July, both Kreider and Trouba had to submit 15 teams each that they wouldn't go to, right? So they're both available for trade, even though Jake Trouba has made it abundantly clear for family reasons, he doesn't want to go anywhere. He's certainly willing to consider what the options are in the offseason, but for now, he'd like to stay in New York. And, you know, Kreider, I think, was somewhat blindsided by this news. The tricky part, though, here, guys, it's not like, you know, neither player has any value, especially Kreider. But you guys know, I mean, with so many cap teams, especially the top teams, how do you make a deal like this in season? And automatically, I'm reminded, okay, well, it's unlikely, but it's not impossible. Look at what Kevin Adams and Kelly McCrimmon did in moving Jack Eichel, a $10 million player, to the Vegas Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. Now, that didn't happen, you know, within a week or two of having conversations. Both GMs there would tell you that they had worked on this for months. So back to the Rangers, the messaging that I'm getting from general managers is, again, unlikely that something happens in the near future, maybe closer to the trade deadline. It depends on what Chris Drury and the Rangers are willing to take back. You know, there's got to be contracts, if not bad contracts, that would have to come back the other way. And what's encouraging Drury to go down this road? Is it a scare tactic because the Rangers, at least of late, have been inconsistent? Or is it a salary dump? As Chris Drury looks at, you know, just a boatload of free agent deals that he is going to have to wrestle with in the near future. So there's a lot of considerations that are in play here.
Now, Drags, this is going to sound like crazy talk by me, but would Chris Drury have a bit of a stern talking with Peter Laviolette? And, I mean, we talk about Jim Montgomery got fired, got hired. Derek Lalonde maybe on the hot seat. There's other coaches, but the Rangers are underperforming under Laviolette right now. Would that be something that can come in the rumors and the rumor mill as maybe more losses happen in New York?
Well, I guess anything's possible there. And look, there wouldn't be an owner in the National Hockey League or pro sport that isn't in it to win it. And the Dolan family most definitely expects to contend for the Stanley Cup. And they feel like they've made deep investments to put this team in a position where they should be one of the top contenders. I haven't heard any rumblings around Laviolette. I can't imagine that Chris Drury has any problem having difficult conversations with Lavi, even though Laviolette's got a pretty deep history and a pretty impressive resume when it comes to finding ways to win with clubs. So I don't get the sense that he would be on the hot seat at this stage. But, you know, you look at this team and it's more about what are they lacking aside from the consistency? You know, where's the spark here? They've got elite level goaltending, right? I mean, that's pretty clear. Their defense, on most nights, it should be okay. So what aren't they getting from the key players? And does that then become why you're even positioning that question, Marty? I mean, you know, they've got high-end talent up front. So why isn't that group producing on a shift-in-shift basis? And I'm sure Laviolette has some theories, but he's experienced enough. He's not going to share any of those, especially with guys like me.
Well, which team then beyond the Rangers would be next as most likely to make a move or moves of impact based on, you know, desire to get to where they should be in the standings or recognizing where they're at and already, you know, maybe moving on? And I struggle to even get that question out because I'm not sure how many teams could truly fall into that category yet, but sometimes it's just the reality of doing business that you have to make tough decisions, and maybe some teams have to do that earlier than they would have ever imagined.
Right, and you know, Boston already did it, and I'm looking squarely this week at the Detroit Red Wings. And, you know, so Detroit as of tonight is a three-game homestand, and it's not an easy one. You know, they face some difficult teams there. We know historically Steve Yzerman is a very loyal general manager. I think he had, in his 9 years in Tampa Bay, two coaches. I mean, John Cooper is still there, so, and they won a lot since. Now I look at his time in Detroit, and I think he's been there 6 years, and he's on a second coach. And really, he inherited Jeff Blashill. So Derek Lalonde is really his first coach. He does not want to fire Lalonde, who's in the final year of his contract. But the Red Wings are also kind of still sort of in the mix here. You know, so if they get on a bit of a roll, and that starts with, you know, winning two of three here on home ice, then I think that Yzerman is willing to stand pat because he doesn't see or feel like there's an A-grade sort of upgrade out there available to him. You know, some wonder whether or not there was at least an inquiry around Jim Montgomery before he, of course, went back to the St. Louis Blues. But I think it's key for the Detroit Red Wings to, again, keep it competitive and stay in that mix. So if it becomes obvious on this three-game homestand that they're not doing that, at least in the moment, he can't wash a season. So then you wonder, okay, well, what does he do? If he fires Lalonde, does he look outside at Todd McClellan? You know, you've got Jay Woodcroft out there. You've got Joel Quenneville out there. You do have some interesting possibilities. I don't get that sense. My sense is that maybe he goes with Verratti or he goes with Bugner on an interim basis. Again, assuming that they don't do well at home and he's forced into that decision. And then maybe waits until later in the year, maybe waits until the offseason to see if there is a better coaching candidate available. But firing Lalonde is not high on the list of things that Yzerman wants to do here.
Well, as we are nearing the end of the month of November, it is my job every year to start the goalie rumor mill, the goalie carousel, and now it's not just Colorado that could be involved in it, and it's not just the Edmonton Oilers, but I feel like the Carolina Hurricanes have to also be making calls right now. You mentioned Detroit.
Yeah.
If they don't see it going anywhere, maybe they trade Villiuso or Cam Talbot or Alex Lyon. Like, do you think Carolina is now going to be active, knowing that Freddie Anderson is out longer term, Kochetkov is injured, he took a collision the other day, and they have Spencer Martin in net right now. Sorry, Dregs. Moose, we got Moose crossing, just like his dad. He's stuck on the... Exactly. Yeah.
What about that Foligno extension? Is he close on his deal or what?
Oh, we might have breaking news here. How good is that?
Yeah, well, his dad did it 2 months earlier in this exact spot.
Exactly.
That's outstanding. He's one of my favorite guys.
But yeah.
He's one of our best podcast guests.
Caught me unaware. I was scouring Twitter when he surprised the heck out of me there. Oh my goodness! So before you were rudely interrupted, or were you in the middle of a question?
No, I.
Oh, the goalie carousel. Yes,
goalie carousel. Is Carolina getting involved into maybe bringing somebody new in there?
Well, it makes sense. I mean, that was scary with Kochetkov the other night, right? I mean. Yeah. That looked bad, and as you've already identified here, Marty, we know that he's out. I think that they're hopeful, of course, that he's not going to be out that long term. So if this thing lingers, then I think Eric Tulsky doesn't have much of a choice but to at least look at what the market is. I don't know that they would reconsider John Gibson from Anaheim, but I know that both the representation of Gibson and the Carolina Hurricanes were engaged with Pat Verbeek and the Anaheim Ducks in the offseason. And there was at least an appetite to prolong the conversation, but clearly it didn't lead to anything. So you wonder if that's something that can be revisited. And there's potential other goalies who are in play. Marty, you mentioned the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, see what happens with them in the near future. But I think for both Colorado and for Carolina, at least on the short term, it's more wait and see at this stage.
Any update on Avs coach Jared Bednar and how he's feeling after getting hit in the head by that broken stick from Miles Wood when he smashed it the other night? Oh, my goodness. It's actually startling that this doesn't happen more often, just in and around the bench area, as I'm sure.
Yeah. Greg's, what's worse, losing 8-2 to Tampa or getting hit in the head with a stick as you walk off the ice?
Man. Well, Bednar's a tough dude, so I would say losing 8-2 to Tampa. You know, he'll take the whack to the noggin with a stick anytime as long as it's part of a win. But it's been a tough one for coaches over the last little bit. How about Danny Bylsma? Yeah. Where's the dirty towel on the bench? Was that Jordan Eberle or who was it flung the towel backwards and landed squarely on his head? And then again, sense of humor that Disco Dan has in his post game afterwards shows up with a towel over his head. I mean, that's just good, clean fun.
Yeah, awesome. Dregs, we're going to fly. It's game night here. Lots to still dig into before the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hockey Insider from TSN. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
There is never enough time. I have so many questions, and we don't have a lot of time. But I did cut Dreger a little early just to try to get to why. Here's my question.
Yes.
Why are you so mean to your old teammates? Like, you were throwing your defense guys under the bus earlier. Like, I played with guys that couldn't make a tape-to-tape pass. And they, like, I'm like, listen, that's not a very nice thing to say about your old teammates.
If we had Rhett Warner, Jay McKee, Henrik Delander, Tony Lundman on the show, they would say, Marty is right.
They used to
throw grenades at one another.
Well.
And it was funny to see who couldn't handle whose pass.
Okay.
But I'll say this. Jay McKee was the best shot-blocking defenseman.
Right. This side of Jim Schoenfeld in Sabres history.
Okay.
Yes.
And I played with Danny Girardi, and he was great. But Jay McKee, one of the very first in that era of players to really do it well.
Okay.
Rhett Warner would give everything for everybody, his teammates. Tony Lundman had the best backhand flip in the league. He could hit the scoreboard and And Henrik Delander, I mean, what a stick. They were fantastic.
Okay. We have the gravy boat tonight.
Yes.
Can you utilize your influence within this organization and at some point have a Plowmaster 43 centerpiece that we can give away at some point in future holidays?
I just think
that would be amazing?
My undertaking. Like, I really have to do like a MB43 or a Plowmaster 43, like little pickup truck with the plow.
Yes.
And the back, and you lift the back
with
of the
a little
the
Marty
bed.
Figurine inside of it. You know, like
the tailgate opens and the gravy comes out type of thing. I mean, it would be fantastic.
Okay. We're on to something. This is great. Tonight, it's Buffalo, Minnesota. Oh, by the way, I mean, we've got a minute 45 left. I don't have to take over. If there's stuff you want to get off your chest here in the final minute 45.
You know what? Something I saw on social media today is on this day in 1995, the Sabres beat the St. Louis Blues in St. Louis. That's the day Rob Ray, unfortunately, ran into one Tony Twist.
Oh.
And that's when the story goes is Jim Pizzitelli went into the Blues locker room. Jim Pizzitelli was our trainer, and he used to get things fired up inside the Sabres locker room, but he went into the St. Louis locker room and challenged Tony Twist and said, my tough guy is tougher than you. So when Razor stepped on the ice with Tony Twist, he had no idea that had happened.
Twister was already
fired
up.
Twister was like, I'm going to kill you, and broke his orbital bone. So, yeah. So those are sometimes the stories that happened before the story.
But Razor still never lost a tooth. So, you know, incredible.
And then I got called up in December, right, at 95?
Yep.
And Razor still had, like, the black eyes showing because – and that was a month before.
Okay. Definitely not enough time for this, but I'm going to ask anyway because it was a super cool piece written by Matthew Fairburn.
Yes.
Do you think there's a chance Zach Benson can become some form of a modern-day Danny Gare?
Not the scoring.
No?
Not the 50 goals.
Do you know what's unfair? Danny came in as a 20-year-old and scored 30. Benson came in at 18, so I still think there's this window here. By the time he hits 20, he might be a 30-goal guy.
I think that Zach Benson, the hard work and the relentless pursuit of the puck and everything, 100%, like that defensive-minded line that Bear and Ramsey and Luce had.
Yep.
But I don't think the 50 goals or that type of production will be.
All right, it's all gravy from here. We'll see you at 6:30 tonight for pregame coverage on MSG.